committee. A few years back, when I took a look at the facility, we took a look at various different potential locations for a heliport. I'm hoping you can all orient yourself with respect to where we were. This area number two, as an example, is right adjacent to the emergency department. It's on the same level as the emergency department. As we go into areas three and four, we go further downhill. We talked about this. I talked about it with Randy on the way up. If there were a heliport on airport on hospital property, where that heliport would be would wind up being a serious design discussion with respect to flight safety, proximity to the emergency department, and impacts. Impacts being mostly noise and fumes. We want to take a careful look at being as close to the emergency department as we can get, while still being able to maintain a status of flight safety that is very acceptable, and a situation where we're minimizing impacts. The key is you start with proximity to the emergency department, because that's obviously where the patients are, and we have to obviously, I always think, as long as I've done this, keep reminding myself, why are we doing this? We're doing it for patient outcomes. So proximity is key. So it's not only key from a proximity standpoint to be close to the hospital, it's key to be close to the emergency department, and especially in inclement weather, as I'm sure you can understand here. So those are some of the sites that we took a look at. There were some comments early on in this process, and there were a host of issues that we took a look at that were brought up by BeastHealth. I'm not going to belabor any of these, but this is a summary of a very long document that we did that answered a bunch of questions that BeastHealth had in the beginning. They were interested in the engineering. They were interested in the area identification. They were interested in fueling, whether or not we were going to be doing fueling, which Airlift Northwest would not be doing. They were interested in code issues. They were interested in proximity to the oxygen tanks, which I do not see as an issue compared to the way we do heliports in the United States. They were interested in what agreements there would be in place between Airlift Northwest, as an example, and the hospital. They were interested in noise impacts. They were interested in the power source. One of the interesting things about power is that a properly lighted heliport is a low-lighted heliport. What we don't want to do is ruin pilots' night vision. Plus, these days, with the use of night vision goggles, we're using very specialized lighting at heliports that is visible both with and without night vision goggles. Very low light. I mean, people in the area don't even, for the most part, realize the lights are on. And so that uses very little power. We could basically run an extension cord out from an emergency department and run the amount of power that we would need to run lights for a properly designed heliport. What else do I have here? FAA approval. The FAA does not approve or disapprove. We would look for no objection letter to the use of airspace letter from the FAA in this case. City permits required. I've mentioned that. The city, at least when I talked to them before, would consider it an accessory rather than a conditional use. Who pays? How much does it cost? The cost would depend a lot on this facility about where the heliport would go. If the heliport goes downhill, where we have to elevate the structure and do along what I call a gurney way between the heliport and the emergency department, we run into some pretty heavy costs. On the other side of that equation, we could land next to or on that paved area that's adjacent to the emergency department tomorrow, put a couple of lights up with a wind indicator, cut some trees down, I'm sorry to tell you, and we've got a heliport. So the cost varies a great deal depending on where that heliport is going to go. The doctor was very correct. Elevated heliports can go from $300,000 to $500,000 to $600,000, depending a great deal on being able to get vertical access in elevators. That's really what drives that cost for the most part. Those we don't need to get into. Don't remember exactly what number 17 was, Scott, do you? Increased use of the perimeter road, I think.
No, I'd have to look at the bigger document.
Okay. I think that does it for that. I'd like to point out also, some people usually ask me when I'm doing a heliport, well, where are there other heliports where we have, where are other areas where we have heliports that are very close to hospitals? Here we have Cooley Community Hospital. Most of these I've done at some point in time in the past. All of the hospitals I'll show you right now, there are five or six of them probably, are within 100 feet of the structures, and almost all of them are very close to the emergency departments. So this is Cooley Community Hospital, Eastern State Hospital near Spokane. This is Kittitas Hospital. That heliport is on a one-story roof right above the entrance to the hospital. Lincoln Hospital, Mason General. See the heliport there toward the top of the picture? It doesn't stand up very well. Tri-State Memorial Hospital over in the southeast part of the state. And Libby General Hospital near where my wife and I used to live. All of these hospitals are within easily 100 feet of emergency departments and structures and patient rooms. So I think that shows you that a hospital, a heliport at this hospital in an area that we're kind of thinking might work is not unusual. It's nothing weird or strange or that doesn't happen in other places. I mean, given the time and your patience, I could come up with 100 of these examples that are very similar to this. We always try to go as close as we can get to the emergency department. A couple of other points I'd like to make, and that is that the point was made, well, how do we handle flight operations in a safe manner when we've got a busy airport and a helicopter flying, you know, to an off-site heliport that's really close to that busy airport? It all comes down to what we call memorandums of understanding, so that the parties involved have talked and have worked out policies and procedures to maintain safe flight operations. And it comes down to communications. Randy and his colleagues are used to communicating on what we call a UNICOM frequency, which basically causes fixed-wing pilots and helicopter pilots and any group of either one of those to talk to each other and state their intentions. If Randy's on his way in, even to the heliport here, he no doubt is telling people, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, so you can explain yourself, but
you're right on.
He's telling people, I'm five miles out, my intention is to do this. I'm gonna make an approach generally to the runway, I'm gonna sidestep over and land on the heliport that's adjacent to the runway. He's letting fixed-wing pilots know. He's also flying according to procedures in their nautical information manual, FAA's aeronautical information manual, stating that he is to avoid the flow of fixed-wing aircraft. That's a quote, and that's what he says. So, you know, when it comes down to how do you do that? How do you keep helicopters and fixed-wing pilots to be able to not run into each other? You do it because of prior planning, and you do it because of ongoing communications. And that happens at every well-run facility that I've ever worked with. And I'd like to show you an example of an airport. This is Bend, Oregon. Bend, Oregon, like Friday Harbor, is an uncontrolled airport. That is, there is no control tower. There's not a person up there saying, you guys stay out of each other's way. There is no control tower here. Bend, Oregon has no control tower either. Bend, Oregon, however, is much busier than Friday Harbor. That is a helicopter complex. This is basically a heliport. These are all helicopter parking areas. You can tell by the number of helicopter parking areas that this must be a pretty busy helicopter operating area. And let's take a look at that with respect to the runway. Here we have this helicopter operating area up here. We've got a very, very busy runway here. Look at this fixed-wing jet aircraft here. This is a busy facility. I can almost in my own mind imagine drawing a boundary line down here and saying this is Friday Harbor and this is Peace Island campus. These people operate routinely hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of helicopter flights in a year, along with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fixed-wing flights in a year, and everything operates very smoothly. Is that to say that an accident could never happen? Of course not. You know, that I wouldn't stand here and tell you that. It's just illogical. But would we be doing something, considering the proximity of a heliport at Peace Island to the Friday Harbor Airport, would we be doing something that's weird and unusual and strange and unsafe? No. There are plenty of examples of this. This is kind of an extreme one, because that's a very busy helicopter facility. These people have got it together. They know what they're doing. They knew what their goal was. They put agreements of understanding together. They've got policies and procedures in place. That's what it takes to cause something like this to happen safely. And let me see if I have anything else here for you. There was one that I left out of proximity-wise. I've done all four heliports over the last 25 or 30 years for Seattle Children's Hospital. This is the second one that I did that replaced the long-standing one that was north of the campus. This is a grade-level heliport at Seattle Children's that was put in place, and it was intended to be there for only just a short number of years, while another tower, was being built. This other tower is here, and there's a heliport on the top of it here. I designed that one also. That's currently being used. This is currently gone. There's a new tower being built at Children's that's going to go into this area, where ultimately they'll move another heliport onto that roof. But this is a grade-level heliport that was about 80 feet from the emergency department. The entire face of this building here is patient rooms. Okay? I routinely go back to my clients after I get done with the project and I say, how is it? You know, what are the impacts? How are you doing? We have some impacts, and I'm all for open discussion here. We have some impacts on this new heliport with respect to some fumes, and we're working on that right now. But in terms of whether this grade-level heliport and the operations involved bothered anybody or interrupted any clinical activity or bothered any patients, I got absolutely 100% feedback from the staff that there were no issues. And we're talking 80 feet here. So I hope that answers some of the proximity issues, because usually in an audience that doesn't deal with this every day, there's, well, how can we land a helicopter so close to a hospital without it being really disrupted? It happens all the time. And I believe that is all the slides that I had that I was bringing for you today. Are there questions or anything that I mentioned that anybody would like to discuss?
You discussed conditional versus permitted use with data from a previous administration at the city. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would still hold?
I do, and the reason, of course, you can't predict. You never know for sure.
Right.
They could. It depends. But if the city were to follow what I would call the norm nationally, it would be a permitted accessory use, because since about 1971 or two, when the helicopter EMS system first started, it has grown exponentially. It has grown to hundreds and hundreds of bases, and you don't find many hospitals in this country anymore without a heliport. And it's become so common that if they were to treat even 50% of those as conditional uses, the system would have collapsed a long time ago. So the standard is permitted accessory use. That is the standard. What makes us a little bit different is that some of those hospitals, they'll go through a remodel process, and they'll do the heliport at the same time. So it's all part of the same category in terms of the permits that are sent out.
And is that permitted accessory use challengeable by the community? Have you ever seen
that? I'm not an expert in that area, but I would have to say that once the permitted accessory use is considered the default.
Correct.
So with that given, someone would have to come up with a very good reason why it should not be a permitted accessory use in the first place. If it's kept in that category, it's not really challengeable any more than then the hospital itself would be challengeable. If the hospital is seen as a need, and someone says, well, I'm questioning the need for the hospital itself, that's where you'd almost have to go back to. If it's considered permissible accessory use, I don't see anybody challenging that. They'd have to challenge the category, but not the use itself, if that makes sense.
Something to be investigated.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you categorize something as a permitted accessory use, it's permitted automatically.
Right. Whether you can do that or not on
right.
a land use basis through the city
right.
should be investigated before you make that decision.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The San Juan County has an ordinance stating that heliports cannot be built. Private use heliports cannot be built. Hospitals, I think, generally, where other ordinances like that in the United States are in place, have said, oh, well, we didn't mean hospitals. You know, so that whole permit thing needs to be looked through.
And noise, that you must have standard noise parameters at 100 feet or 250 feet, how they impact the community?
Noise is always a huge and very misunderstood and hard to define issue. It depends on the receptor, it depends on the person. Those of us who've been in the military don't mind the sound of a military jet, you know, other people do. I can only say that in the, especially the smaller communities that I've worked in, noise is a very accepted situation, because when there is helicopter noise from an EMS helicopter, people are going, someone's life's being saved, or someone is looking for a better outcome for whatever they've just gone through. There seems to be a real general acceptance.
Except the children's.
Except the children's.
Except the children's. That's been the issue there for 20 years.
I've been involved in it for a long time, and I agree. That's one of the reasons the fourth heliport is being built, is because the master institution, the master plan,
the noise up.
Put it in the center of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I point out to hospitals or to communities sometimes, if noise is an issue, and I don't find it being an issue at hospitals very often, is that an ambulance going to a heliport or a hospital is oftentimes more disruptive than a helicopter will be.
And coming here today, I don't know the last time you've been here, have you seen change in the structure around here from the last time we went through this? The previous administration, you don't think there's that much change that would create?
No. And in fact, Randy, I was very glad to hear that Randy would be a part of this meeting, because, you know, I always look to the pilots, you know, try to run my designs through.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, we have a facility, the more airspace you have, the better. You know, and you can get to a point in a heliport design where you just do not have the airspace to make this safe, and I can't support it. And I've done that a few times. Not often, but it happens. Here, with some modifications, and those modifications would have to be trees, and depending on where the heliport would go, the heliport here could be operated safer. And the facility, I've not noticed any facility structural changes that would change my opinion.
And from I have a question.
Time you start the process, let's say now, to completion on the average is?
For design and construction?
Pardon?
For design and construction?
Yeah, from 0 to 100.
I can design it, given the fact that I wouldn't be doing anything else, I could design it in a week easily. And construction depends a lot on where it would go. If it were to go high on the hill in that area number 2 that we talked about, that's pretty much leveled it with the ED,
mm-hmm.
You could construct it in a week if you had the materials available, lighting and that sort of thing. It's not a long-term process.
And the memorandums of understanding, they're pretty cookbook, or are they basic understandings and then they add details?
Those are not difficult to do at all if you're dealing with willing parties, and there's no reason for me to assume that we wouldn't have them. And I've done more than I care to count. They're not difficult. They're basically, the memorandum of understanding here, I stumbled over that word, It's simply a matter of everybody.
That's why they call them MOUs.
Exactly, thank you. Thank you. Is everybody agreeing to communicate? And pilots are attuned to that in the first place. Where they get difficult is sometimes if you have a private use heliport that a businessman owns, and then you've got other public facilities, they can be very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a difficult situation. This is a matter of making sure we have communications, that everybody is signed on to the fact they're going to talk to each other. That's the key. And I would assume that if Randy were to make an approach to a heliport at Peace Island, that he would essentially continue to make his basic approach to the airport.
That's exactly right. Looking at where we are, our current procedure is we make an approach to the runway, and then we sidestep over to the elevated helipad there at the airport.
And how many feet?
Pardon me?
And how many feet?
We're several hundred feet over the end of the runway. And then gradual descent down to that helipad.
Crust.
And the only difference here is it would be a longer sidestep. We'd still make our approach to the runway. We'd still be over the same flight path that all of the other airplanes departing and arriving are going over. So noise really wouldn't change a whole lot. There wouldn't be much difference at all in the noise between the end of the runway 16, the north end of the airport there, over to the hospital here. We'd overfly a couple of the hangars there, but there aren't any private residences or businesses that I'm aware of that would be impacted by that additional noise. And as far as David's absolutely right, we talk on the radio to other airplanes in the pattern all the time. I'm making 3 calls before I even arrive over the end of the runway. Most of the time, those are in the blind because there's nobody else here. But if there's somebody else out here in the pattern there, we're talking to them as well. So it's pretty straightforward. There's not much difference at all in the way the helicopter would be operated.
How many pads do you guys use in the state of Washington?
Pardon me?
How many pads do you guys use in the state of Washington?
Oh, good grief. Hospital pads alone, just in the Puget Sound region, there's probably 40 or 50 of them we go to. Most of them, like David said, are pretty darn close to the ED. Some are on rooftops. Some it's kind of a rabbit warren to get from there, down from the top of the roof, a couple of elevators, some hallways down to the ED, but most of them are pretty darn close.
Cascade Valley Hospital in Arlington, up till about 4 years ago, we still did a transition from either the airport or an off-site field, an LZ, and then they had their helipad put in. I think it's been 4 years. So there's very few facilities that we go to that were not at a helipad.
I have a question. Are you done?
More? Yeah.
Okay. David, you mentioned a significant cost differential between pad 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Well, where's the starting point in terms of dollars, and where's the high end?
For a grade level helipad, if we're talking about something that we're, for instance, down the hill at Peace Island, you know, we're talking about superstructure, we're talking about building dirt work. You know, that's really where a lot of your money is. You know, that could be in the $75,000 to $100,000 range. If we're up higher on the hill, our basic thing is some paving. I don't like to use asphalt because in a hot environment, not so much here, but especially in a really hot environment, we run the risk of rutting and even having what's considered a dynamic rollover, which isn't any more fun than it sounds like, with a helicopter by getting a skid stuck in that. So I always do concrete. So we've got the cost of 1,600 square feet of concrete for a 40 by 40 pad. And some lights. You know, your lights and associated equipment, for those lights you're going to run probably $12,000, maybe $14,000, plus some concrete. And the closer you are to the ED, then the shorter your, what I call a gurney way, is from the ED into, or from the helicopter heliport into the ED. So the cost really runs a gamut. I can use, I think, Eastern State Hospital as an example of a grade level heliport that was done basically on the same level as the emergency department. That heliport, with design fees, was about $65,000. And I think as far as concrete equipment and everything else, we were at about $50,000 for the actual construction. There was some coordination with the architect that cost some money because Eastern State was going to do some other things at that time. But I always think that a ballpark, unless there's some unusual things going on, a $50,000 to $60,000, maybe $70,000 number for a heliport is plenty, including design.
And maintenance?
Per year? Almost yeah. Minimal. With lighting, first of all, getting into technicalities here that you may not be interested in, but the lower lighting level we have at heliports, the safer they are for pilots, because they, you know, we used to just flood a heliport with lots of light, you know, and they were bright, and you could see it from a mile away. But the problem is it ruins pilots' night vision. They get done landing, and they walk into the emergency department, they can't see anything, and it takes a while for their eyes to adjust, especially in a rural environment or going over water, you know, their night vision is gone for a while. So we do our best to limit, I do my best to limit lighting at heliports to the very bare essentials. We need some perimeter lighting that shows where the limits of the structural landing area are. We need a lighted wind indicator. On occasion, you'll need some lighting along the gurneyway. Depends on the ambient lighting involved. And beyond that, it's pretty simple. Some graphic markings to make sure that it's identified as a hospital facility. And that's really about all you need. I told the guys on the way up here, if my clients realized how simple this really was, I probably wouldn't have a job. But, I don't mean to oversimplify it, but it is not a complicated process. A lot of it depends on whether or not site work is necessary.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sorry, did I answer your question?
Yes, sir, I did.
I sometimes no, yes, sir.
If Airlift funds this development as a private heliport, would other operators be able to access it?
That's a very good question. Heliports in this country are divided into military, public use, and private use. There are two designations for private use. Prior permission required is one, or private use is another term that's used. That definitions depend on who you're talking to. Let's just talk FAA for a while. They'll use either private use or prior permission required. They are considered to be for the use of the owner, in this case, i.e. the hospital, or those invited by the owner. In my work, I parenthetically add the terms specifically invited by the owner. So the hospital in this case, if I were doing this work, I would suggest to the hospital that they send a letter to whatever operator they want to use the heliport. Introduce them to the heliport, what its facilities are, what maybe any safety concerns there are that are unmitigatable, just to be aware of. And then invite that operator, such as Airlift Northwest, to come use the facility. Airlift Northwest would then write back saying, thank you very much, we accept. Those letters go into a file, okay, so that the owner of the hospital has basically met the intent of the FAA when they're describing private use facilities. The hospital then has the judgment to be, has the responsibility, I should say, to invite and control whoever uses that heliport. If they want to limit it to Airlift Northwest, they can. If they want to limit it to the Coast Guard, they can. If they want to invite other EMS operators, they can. Most hospitals in this country do not recognize that responsibility. They simply build it and say, whoever comes to use it, they come to use it. That's not a good position for the hospitals to take from a liability standpoint. So the short answer to your question is, the hospital should be in the driver's seat as a private use heliport operator owner to invite and accept, have people accept the invitation if whoever they want to land it. They are not obligated at all, in fact, should not allow landings by those that are not specifically authorized.
Does the Navy or Coast Guard operate any H-1 class that I calculate?
Not that I'm aware of. There may be in the H-2 class, but oftentimes we'll find H-2 helicopters landing at H-2. There's no code reason they can't. The way the rules read that we go by is you categorize a helicopter or a heliport according to those helicopters that are most often, say, routinely going to use the facility. There are many heliports that are technically H-1 heliports around the state, as an example. where a Coast Guard or a Navy helicopter will occasionally land. It may take an extra security person out there to make sure they maybe move a car out of the way or that things are otherwise safe. That's not, it's not illegal to land an H-2 helicopter at an H-1 port.
Would the military require a memorandum for an agreement?
If I were a hospital and I were close to an area where military helicopters operated, I would definitely have a memorandum of understanding with them, because there are certain military helicopters that I think would not be too big or generate too much noise or too much water wash to use my heliport, whereas there are some military helicopters I shouldn't be allowing at all because they'd be very disruptive. So I'd want to make sure that we knew what circumstances, what helicopters would be flown, under what terms, and there would be a memorandum that would cover those things. It may turn out that the design of a heliport or the proximity to patient rooms is such that military helicopters really shouldn't use a particular heliport. I'm not going to make a judgment on this one right now because I haven't studied that. I would say that the smaller Coast Guard helicopters that are flying in this area probably could land here on occasion as there was an emergency that might arise. I wouldn't have any problem with that. I will say something else, too, and that is that you have a heliport, which I designed the original one with Pat Mayo, for anybody who might remember Pat Mayo years ago, the original heliport here at the airport. If there were two helicopter facilities in the area and you had a major emergency going on, you'd have much more flexibility from a patient standpoint. Did I answer your question? I'm sorry. My answers are long-winded. It's just a habit of mine that I can't seem to break. So,
Mark, I believe now, even with the helipad there at the airport, I don't believe the Navy lands on that one, and I'm pretty sure the Coast Guard doesn't either. I think they land down on the ramp.
Okay. Yeah. And I think given the proximity of the airport, if you start talking about a Dauphine or something that's a little bit larger, I think that, but especially with the inability to test that often, I think they'd probably be better at the airport than it would be at the hospital. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? It's a big subject. There's lots of different things to know in terms of authority and jurisdiction and impacts. I think the impacts thing, if I were a layperson in the audience, can you land a helicopter that close to the hospital without being real disruptive? I do it all the time. And I try to go back and get feedback, and I have yet to hear someone who says it's not worth it. And that's just as honest as I can be about it. That's just the way it is. Because they recognize the need, you know, for why that helicopter is flying.
Just one other follow on the
sure.
In your presentation, you indicated that the cost for the old helipad would be negotiated. If we're talking on the order of $65,000 to develop this, would the expectation be that Air Lieutenant Boyce could bear the lion's share of that?
That's a good question. I can't. Did everybody understand, like, who's going to pay? I can't speak for Air Lift Northwest. I think if I could assume, I would say probably that Air Lift Northwest, given the opportunity to land closer to the hospital to improve patient care, would not let this project fail because of lack of funding.
Correct. Yeah, that's... Okay. So, I mean, I think that's something that needs to be discussed, but, we wouldn't want this to not get off the ground just because of funding. Yeah. Quite honestly, though, Airlift is in a different position financially than we were 3 years ago when we were talking more openly about that we could pay for it. We do need to do more detailed feasibility, get a more specific number. So I think it would be dishonest for us to say we can cover all the costs right now.
What is the expectation that the public hospital district would be contributing to this, or would it be a PSL? How do you envision it?
I think we'd have to sit down and discuss that. Yeah. I'm just not in a position to say specifically.
I can say, having done this for a long time, there should not be any money or even involvement expected by the FAA. And in fact, the FAA does a wonderful job on a lot of things, but any facility who's thinking about taking FAA money should think about it very carefully because of the strings attached. And the design criteria causes the cost to go up. The state of Washington is not one of the states that will be able to use its grant funds that it used for airports as a grant program. they cannot be used currently for hospitals, although I'm working with that, with them on that issue. So the funds would have to come locally.
I think one other thing to maybe open up is that just in terms of getting the feasibility, a more updated feasibility study, Airlift would be able to cover that cost.
Thank you. So, you know, the categories, more correctly, I know we've run into some time here. Categories are, would be landings so close to the hospital be problematic? I don't know if it would be or not. I can only tell you based on experience at a number of other facilities, it's not. So I think at some point in time, you have to almost take a leap of faith and say, let's take what works elsewhere and see why it wouldn't work here. From a cost standpoint, I think we've identified that. Jurisdictional standpoint, the FAA has no jurisdiction over the facility. The state of Washington is not one of the states that holds any jurisdiction over these facilities, except for the Department of Health in terms of the design. You've got electrical inspection, you've got a town permit, but your jurisdiction and authority on this particular issue is all local. It's not driven federally or by the state, except for the Department of Health. And the Department of Health probably, after the fact now that the hospital's already built, probably wouldn't even have anything to say about it. They would defer to an electrical inspector to make sure that it's electrically safe. So those are your basic things. From a flight safety standpoint, Randy, what's your opinion?
The only obstacle I see right now to putting a helipad on the grounds anywhere here is probably some possible tree removals, and that's, yeah. I just want a clear ingress and egress path. That's
the you have to relocate three deer.
Pardon me?
You have to relocate three deer.
Helicopters are good at that. Helicopters are really good at that.
Yeah, they do it automatically.
So I think from a feasibility standpoint, it works. From a funding standpoint, I think it could work. I don't see a reason why it wouldn't if you have ruling parties. From an authority standpoint, it depends on the town. It does not depend on the federal government or the state. We recognize, and I'm here as a consultant to Airlift Northwest today, we recognize that the final decision rests with the hospital. They own the property. We're not here to twist any arms or to try to get the hospital to do something that it doesn't want to do. It's their property. We understand that and we respect it. As I said in the beginning, I'm always comfortable leaving a meeting like this if people are working with accurate facts. And if you're working with accurate facts and you make this decision one way or the other, and the hospital makes this decision one way or the other, who am I? I mean, I'm fine with that. Helicopters, heliports, they tend to get into that category where there's a lot of misunderstanding, misinterpretations that our goal here is to make sure that we're telling the truth and making sure you understand the facts. And then it's up to the community to decide what to do. Are there any other questions? Anything in any category that I can answer?
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you very much. Excellent. And if you do have other questions, be sure to reach out and let us know.
Thank you, Scott, and you. Randy, and David. Very much. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Very helpful.
It was very uplifting.
That's what are you doing. H1 or H2?
Warren? Thank you.
Uplifting? That's my goal. It's uplifting.
Yeah, I got it. I knew you'd like
I'm Scott. Sure you're a challenge for your colleagues here. Yeah.
Is there any chance of
constantly
here? Yes, I'll figure
it out.
It's all right. I'll figure it out. I'm happy I'm his contact. Thank you. Yeah. Do you know who got the slides? Somebody emailed the slides to someone. Mm-hmm. Do you know who got the slides?
He did.
Who emailed them to somebody? Do you know?
Okay, returning to the agenda, the